Opioid abatement money is on its way to the counties of the Upper Cumberland and to those all across the state. The question now, how will it be best spent? And can the counties of the Upper Cumberland work together to solve some common issues? For example, how do we get recovering addicts jobs that they need? How do we find them affordable housing from people who are willing to rent to them? In short, as more and more people find themselves at the mercy of addiction, we as a society can't simply put them in a box any longer and label them as addicts. We need them for jobs. We need them to raise their children. We need them as contributing members of society. And so we begin a two-week journey today as we sit down with some very honest recovering addicts who tell their story. Shirley Bailey, Rob Frazier, Lindsay Holloway, and Will Roberts.
I grew up in White County, and from the age of 13 till about the age of 31, went through a massive drug addiction. It was a drug addiction that took multiple elements of my life, and I eventually went to the Adult and Teen Challenge program in Memphis, turned my life around, and now I'm finishing grad school. I'm a pastor. I work with our local drug coalition and help other ministries and just give away what was given to me.
My name is Will Roberts. I was raised in an addicted household. Pretty much everybody in our household was addicted to drugs of some sort or another. Grew up in the music business down in Texas. Traveled even at a young age and was addicted to drugs before I could really remember how old I was. Lived on and off on and off society. I was supported by society. Lost my mother to the disease of addiction in 1982 at the age of 52. I first started trying to get clean in 1978. I was 20 years old. For those of you who cannot count, that makes me like 40 now. For those of you who can count, just keep it to yourself. But I finally wound up getting clean and sober this time, April 18th, 1989. And from then until now, I've been in the drug addiction field of some sort or another, trying to carry this message.
Lindsay?
I grew up in a good Christian home. I was in church every Sunday, every Wednesday, all the youth groups. I got saved about 12 years old, but it was also the year my parents divorced. And their divorce really devastated me. And I had to change schools, didn't really know where I fit in or what my identity was from the divorce. And I started hanging out with kids that partied, and I had always felt like I had to perform to be accepted. And the ones that I didn't have to perform for were the kids that were doing drugs. So I fell in with them. It started out as just having fun and partying. I started using meth around the age of 15. By 16, I was in full-blown addiction. I was a varsity cheerleader, vice president of FCA. I was in and out of like 14 different clubs, but I dropped out the last semester of my senior year. Tried to go to college around 20, realized that there was no way to keep my drug addiction and up the persona I had built for other people to see. I became an IV drug user at 21. I was cooking and selling meth. And then by the age of 24, I was planning my suicide. And the day that I planned my suicide was the day I got indicted with federal charges. And I realized that God saved my life. I went to a program in Nashville called The Next Door, completely turned my life around. And then, like Rob, I'm now a pastor. My husband and I started a nonprofit called This Is Living Ministries, where we serve women coming out of incarceration. And now we just try to help other people in the same town where we raised all kinds of cane, we now are bringing heaven.
Shirley Bailey, what's your story?
So my drug use started, first of all, in high school, just what seemed to be, you know, fun at the time. The consequences weren't as much as they were in my 20s. But I got pregnant my senior year of high school, so I was a teenage mom. And right out of high school, I got married, was divorced within 2 years. And I think after that, just the devastation of the abandonment, not just to me, but also with my daughter, I didn't know how to process that. So I turned back to the same things I was doing as a teenager, except this time the drugs were harder, the relationships were more abusive, and the consequences were way more. And so when I did any drug that was put in front of me for several years, but I could kind of function, just party a few days a week and then still go to school, still work. But when I really got on methamphetamines, within 2 months, I was an IV drug user. And then from that point on, I would say that meth robbed the ability for me to love anything other than that. And so I no longer could be a mom. The only two emotions I really had was anger and shame. And those two things just took me to places that I thought I would never go and made me into somebody I said I would never be. With 2.5 years into the meth addiction, I, you know, like Lindsay, wanted to die, was hoping to die, was a little bit too scared to die, didn't want to leave my daughter with the legacy of a junkie dead mom. And so my younger sister had followed in my footsteps in addiction, and she, through some tragic circumstances, had went to Teen Challenge, and her roommate had prayed for me every night by hand and by name for 4 months. And through that prayer, God changed my heart. And so I thought, well, I'll just try it. I know this won't work. I've been in and out of jail, in and out of mental institutions, in and out of secular rehabs, and nothing had worked. And I was pretty much ready to give up. And this was about in 04. But I decided to go to Teen Challenge and try it. And I went to California, and God met me there, changed my life. I came back home in 05. And I've just immediately started plugging into ministries or churches or anything that I could do to help free women, especially women, you know, and get them back to their purpose. Let them know that there is freedom. There is a way out. And so that's my story.
I'm amazed that each of you is able to share this story seemingly matter-of-factly. Is it hard to recount what each of you has just recounted?
I think once you're delivered from that shame, Scripture says that we're delivered by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, and our testimonies keep us free, and then they also give other people hope that it's not hopeless.
I think it's a wonderful thing. It's the gift that we've been given to carry this message to other people. So, no, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, so part of the recovery journey is taking ownership and accountability and getting real. And the person you really have to get real with is yourself. So I just find it beautiful that the darker you find out that my testimony was, the greater glory God gets for what he did in my life. So mm-hmm. he's turned it completely around.
Amen. Yeah, I consider it a gift. I know I have an open door conversation with my daughter, Olivia, who was 7 at the time I went into Teen Challenge. She's 26 now. And we've just always had an open door policy where she can talk to me about trauma she'd been through or things that I put her through or things she remembers from my addiction. And with that has just came the openness that there isn't shame and there's love and acceptance and accountability. And we really just consider it a gift and a testimony.
She is Shirley Bailey. Rob Frazier is here. Lindsay Holloway with us. Will Roberts. We're talking about addiction. Our conversation continues as we talk with four people who have been through this and have come out the other side. And I don't know if they would say they're better for it, but they are certainly healing from it. Shirley, is there a moment that you identify, a trauma that you identify that was a turning point of what turned you to drugs?
Not what turned me to drugs. Really, I just feel like once the door is open, that is going to always kind of be in your back pocket. And so when you're young and that door's open as a teenager, you don't realize that that's your go-to if you're stressed or you want to fit in or all the things. So what happens is once you open that door, whatever age that is, that's going to be something you're going to go back to. And so I don't think there wasn't really a major trauma. Now, I had trauma growing up as a child, but I had two good parents that love me, but I think everybody experiences either little T or big T, you know, trauma. So not one major thing. I just think a lot of it too is the crowd you're around, and you know, that's just what it was. There was a lot of people that smoked pot and drank, and for them, they didn't always do that, but some of them still do today. Some of them are dead today. That was just for me, you know, an open door.
Will, is it important in your recovery to spend time trying to identify why it started?
I'm a little unusual in the group. When I got sober, I was so sick. I was at a place in my life where it was completely over for me. I had no hope. I was living in a hovel out here in Jackson County. No running water, no electricity. Couldn't keep my body clean. And I was at that place where the identification was key to me getting into recovery. I needed people around me who understood what I'd gone through, who saw through my facade, who could love me right where I was at unconditionally. And so in my case, I have been pretty much to a meeting pretty much every day for the past 34 years plus. And I'm not bragging or complaining about that. It's become a lifestyle for me. So it's so integrated into the fabric of my life that my wife, we've been married for 30 years after dating for 2 weeks, by the way, she doesn't know where I end and the program begins or vice versa. I believe that this is all about deep work in community over time. And the fellowship is such an important and integral part of it that if we don't, if I don't pay attention to that, or we don't pay attention that people need that, then we kind of lose sight of what this is really all about. It's really a discipleship process.
How many people did you push away through your addiction?
Every one of them. I can speak of that colloquially. Everyone. There were so many bridges burned that. You know, there were different people. They're like, well, I'm not coming to get him again. I'm not trying to do this. And it's because, you know, part of that ownership. I had to take ownership that I'm the reason those bridges were burned because I did these different things. And I think that the big mask that we have to remove in students and different one is the everybody else is responsible mask. And we have to say, well, no, your actions have consequences, and these are the consequences of your actions. So basically, and I can say that collectively, everybody in my life I had basically pushed away. My mother had contacted a friend that was a pastor to arrange him to preach my funeral because she knew I'd be dead within a matter of weeks.
We're talking about addiction, the price of addiction, and what we all need to understand about the illness as we continue. Will Roberts, Lindsay Holloway, Rob Frazier, Shirley Bailey are with us. We're talking about the issue of addiction. What was the lowest point?
Mine was that day, September 28, 2010. I'd planned my suicide. My stepbrother had gone to get our drugs, and when he came home, I was just going to do them all and let my family think I accidentally overdosed and just remove myself and all the pain I was causing for them. But luckily, the local police had surrounded my house about an hour before that was fixing to happen and stopped that. Yeah. They saved my life.
Anyone else have a lowest point?
The first 31 years of my life was the lowest point for me.
Yeah.
You know, a life without a deep connection with God is a hopeless feeling. Mm-hmm. And what happened to me was I had been saved at about the age of 16, but I was still enslaved until I was 31. So I was in this process of the early phases of sanctification. And in that process, I was very resistant to the change that God had for me. I had an indifference and an intolerance towards spiritual principles. Although I'd accepted Jesus, I didn't really know how to make him the Lord of my life. And, you know, I found a process in the program that we have, Life Recovery, whereby you go through these steps, and as you go through the steps, you wind up with a deeper more intimate relationship with Him day by day. Mm-hmm. And we do that through surrender and cleaning up our side of the street and, you know, carrying the message to others. And so it's an important process. And the great thing about it is it's like all Christian walks, we go through it over and over and over again. And as we go through that thing, we get a little bit closer to Him every time. We reveal more of ourselves. There's things about us that we don't even know. There's things about us that have been hidden for so long, we begin to believe our lies. We begin to lose the ability to communicate with people. And over time, we get to the point to where when we hit bottom, we've hit so many bottoms by that time, it's like just another day, you know. Mm-hmm. But April 18th, 1989, for me, was that day when after losing throwing my family away, my wife, my businesses, every good thing that ever happened to me, I was about done, and I was ready to make a change and really turn to Him. And when I did that, He was right there waiting on me.
Surely the people that you pushed away, did you hear the statement of, I knew it wasn't you?
Yes, I heard that often, especially with people who love me. My mom would definitely be number one. My dad, he's passed away today, but they knew me. I didn't know me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who I was without having to put on some kind of face or front of performance. I did not know who I was. But mom and dad both, there were times in my addiction they would say, you're not my daughter. This is not, I don't know who you are, but this is not my daughter.